When we usually, when we open a Chumash and we look at Mefarshim, so typically speaking, when we're learning, we are looking at individual psukim passages and we're trying to understand the passage, and the Rishonim are simply a tool in understanding that particular pasuk, that particular passage. And to some extent, that is the function of Rishonim from our vantage point of Parshanim, of commentators. But the truth be told, when you sort of step back, there is another way of studying a Chumash and Mekaras Gedolos, and that's not studying the Psukim themselves, but actually studying the Mefarshim. What was their particular approach? What was their, if you want to call it, Derech HaLimud? In other words, put differently perhaps, what was the method to the madness? You know, we read Rashi sort of as atomized comments, but Rashi presumably had some agenda when he wrote his commentary. And the same could be true with probably most Rishonim. In fact, if you decided you were going to sit down and write a commentary on Chumash yourself, presumably you'd have to think about programmatically what was your goal. Some Rishonim, particularly Chachmei Svarad, provided us with introductions in which they lay out what their particular agenda is. Ibn Ezra in particular has a lengthy introduction describing various kinds of commentaries. Ramban has a Hakdama to his Perush on the Torah where he sort of lays out what he's going to do. Of course, one of the questions you can always ask about various Parshanim when they lay out an introduction is that they actually succeed in doing what they intended to do. Today, probably, I suspect, when we write books, we write the introduction after we write the book. I don't know how Rishonim did it. Obviously, when you have the luxury of writing the introduction after you, or if you choose to write the introduction after you write the book, so you can tailor the introduction to actually describe what you did, as opposed to what you're setting out to do. This evening I wanted to focus on one particular Rishon, the Rashbam, Shmuel Bar Meir, Rashi's grandson, who was a commentator who is probably not frequently studied by most people, but Rashbam is really a fascinating commentary. He marks sort of the apotheosis of the school of French, the northern French Parshanim. He really marks the sort of the pinnacle, and he was sort of the quintessential Pashtun, someone who really, for the most part, eschewed Drush of Chazal. Occasionally he make reference to it, but really he focused on laser-like, on what we might term as Pshut of Shel Mikra. One of the difficulties, of course, in reading Rashbam, it's much worse with his grandfather in this regard, is that they didn't write a Hakdama to his commentary. Rashi, particularly in that regard, is exceedingly difficult, but even Rashbam did not write a very clear introduction to his commentary. How then does one discern what Rashbam's methodology was? So there are really sort of two ways. The hard way, which ultimately is the only true way, is to actually read the entire commentary and sort of classify the kinds of comments that he makes. That's the luxury that, you know, some scholars who spend their lives in the ivory tower have. Rashbam, fortunately, however, does make it a little bit easier in that while he doesn't provide an introduction, there are a number of passages in his commentary where he makes programmatic statements. Again, you can always measure whether or not you think his commentary is consistent with that, but nonetheless, at least he does give us an idea of the direction in which he's heading. So I really divided, what I've done here is I've divided the sources that hopefully we'll get a chance to read most of into sort of three sections. One are sort of Rashbam's programmatic statements generally and to specific areas of Torah, how he approaches them. The second, I've chosen just a few examples, how he deals with sort of Midrashi Agada and what is his response. And then when it comes to halacha, the Rashbam's approach to halacha, which is really sort of its own topic. In other words, how Parshanim approached reading legal passages in the Torah when Chazal already have some very clear commentary on it. Now, obviously, Chazal have commentary on non-legal passages as well, what we call Midrash Agadah. But certainly, from a modern vantage point, differing with Chazal on non-legal passages seems to be less problematic than offering a differing interpretation of what the Pshut of Shel Mikra is on a verse that entails halacha. That in theory, that may not be the intent of the commentator, but has ramifications halacha lemaisa. Okay, so anyway, starting from the top, so the Rashbam writes in his very first comment on Chumash, and I actually should add two notes. The Rashbam's commentary on Chumash is not well preserved. I don't know the exact manuscript evidence, but we're missing, for example, Rashbam on most of the first three Parshios. We have just the beginning of Bereishis, and the rest of it we don't have for those Parshios. All we have reconstructed are from comments he makes elsewhere in his commentary where he refers to verses in Parshas Noach and Parshas Lech Lecha. The other point about Rashbam's commentary, I think, which will become a apparent in a number of the passages is that Rashi is the commentator on Chumash who has merited probably by far the most super commentaries. A super commentary is a commentary on a commentary. And Rashi has numerous perushim have been written on Rashi, numerous commentaries continue to be written on Rashi, but probably the first super commentary on Rashi was actually Rashbam. Because when you read Rashbam, generally, when you read Rashbam across the Torah, you always have to read him as against Rashi. And many of his comments, some of them may be somewhat clear, but they become much, much clearer if first you read Rashi and you realize that Rashbam is responding against his grandfather. So anyway, so the first passage in the Torah, Rashbam writes, Yavinu hamaskilim, ki chol divrei rabosenu udrashosehem kenem v'amitim. The intelligent ones understand that all of the words of our rabbis and all of their drashos were correct and true. V'zehu ha'amur b'mesech ha'shabes havina b'atmani sereshnin v'lo yadana de mikra yotze midei pshuto. So it seems what Rashbam is stating, there's a Gemara in Shabbos where one of the Amorim says, I was 18 years old, I had learned all of Shas, and I didn't even know Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto, which suggests that the notion of Pshuto Shel Mikra, as opposed to the Midrash and Chazal, is fundamentally secondary. He could have spent up to, he was 18 in the yeshiva, and he never even realized that Pshuto Shel Mikra even mattered. Okay, but that's what Rashbam says. The ikar ha-halachos v'adrashos yotze miyitur ha-mikros o mishinu ha-lashon shenichta Pshuto Shel Mikra. So most of the halachos and the drashos stem from the extra words in psukim, or from the way if the language is written differently. So that pshuto shemikro was written that way. Belashon sheyicholon lelo mehenu ikar hadrasha. So Rashbam says here that the way Medrash Chazal works is by ignoring Pshuto Shel Mikra. In other words, the Pasuk was written, and the Pasuk may have been written in a certain way so that you could derive the halachos, but that is in Pshuto Shel Mikra. So what Rashbam says, at least at the outset, it's kind of a funny kind of apology. It's almost a firm apology. Of course, the Midrash Chazal are really the primary thing. Okay? Because after all, Pshuto Shel Mikra is secondary. Of course, that's not what Rashbam does throughout his commentary. Now, why, of course, did I choose to talk about Rashbam this week? Because as I was thinking about the parsha and what would be a good topic, as soon as I started running through the laning in my head, I got to the second pasuk in the parsha, and all of a sudden I said, of course. There's a very famous and lengthy passage in Rashbam here. It's fascinating both from a methodological perspective, but even more from a human perspective. It's one of the few passages in which you see Rashbam as a person, as opposed to Rashbam just advancing a set of ideas. So Rashbam writes that, first he begins with a similar apology. He writes, Yaskilu b'yavinu o'avei seichel. Those who love wisdom will understand. Mashilimdun rabosenu ke mikra yotze mei pshuto. They understand that Chazal said, e mikra yotze mei pshuto. There is a pshat. Af ki ikara shotora basa lalamdenu, ulahodienu b'remizas apshat. Even though the primary purpose of Torah came to teach us and let us know through the hints of the pshat, ha hagados, va halachos, va adinim, so the midrashim, the laws, ayidei arichos halashon, by speaking, with greater verbosity, va ayidei shloshim ushtaimidos, Rav Leza ben Osher Yosei Aglili, which most people are not familiar with. The Ayidei Shloshes Midos Rav Yishmael. Most of you are probably familiar with the Yud Gimel Midos Rav Yishmael. Even if you're not, haven't paid attention, when we say Rav Yishmael Omer at the end of Karbanos, those are the 13 different methods of extracting law from Sukkim. There's also a lengthier Brisa, the 32 Midos of Rabbi Elazar ben Osher Yosei Aglili. It's printed in the back of the Vilna Shas, I think, in the first volume. If you take the standard Vilna Shas behind Brachos, there's lots of interesting Hakdamas that are printed there, but there's there you will find the Brisa, the 32 Midos in interpreting Midrash, in homiletics, Agada, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Osher Yosei Aglili. So Rashbam says, even though that's the most important thing, do you know that Emek Reyotzi Midei Pshuto? The Harishonim, the earlier authorities, Mitoch Hasidusam, out of their piety, Nisasku Lintos Achrei Hadrasho Shehein Ikar. They tended to go after the Midrashim because that really is the important thing. When we told Kach, because of that, lo hurgalu ba'omek pshuto shel mikra. They really weren't steeped in, they weren't accustomed in this, in the depths of pshuto shel mikra. Now he wants to explain, why did they neglect Pshuto Shel Mikra? Of course, remember that Rashbam has to, as in theory, do all the Pashtanim, has to answer a very basic question. If Chazal weren't interested in this, why are we? So the Rashbam is trying to explain that, of course, a mikra yitzvah mei pshuto, so obviously it's worth studying. But why then did the earlier authorities, why were they not interested in pshuto shemikra? So he says, firstly, he quotes a Gemara in Brachos, where I think it was Rebbe's advice, al tarbu b'neichem b'higayon. It's not clear what that is. Rashi, I think, quotes two interpretations. One, I think it was Greek philosophy, and the other is Tanakh, the study of Tanakh. This is often pointed to as one of the passages why firm Jews don't really study Tanakh. Al tarbu b'neichem b'higayon. The Gemara also says in Bava Metzia, I think, ha'osei b'mikra midav ein amida. Ha'osei b'talma ein lecha mida gedol mizeh. Studying Tanakh, it's nice. Daf yomi, that's important. So, umitoh kach lo hurgulu kokach b'pshutan shel mikraos. That's why they weren't habituated in studying pshuta shemikra. Uchud aminam b'besech ha'shabes, the Gemara quoted in the first passage. Havina bartmane, sari shinim agarsina, kulei talmudav aloha v'edane de mikra yotzim de pshuta. I learned all the shas, and I didn't know a mikra yotzim de pshuta. Now he says, V'gam Rabbeinu Shlomo, avi imi, so also Rabbeinu Shlomo, Rashi, my mother's father, Meirene Gola, Shepiresh Torah Neviim Uksuv, who wrote commentaries on all of Tanakh, Nosan Lev Lefarish Pshuto Shemikra. He made an attempt to explain Pshuto Shemikra. V'af ani Shmuel Brameir Chasano Zatzal, and I too, Shmuel the son of Meir, his son-in-law, Nisvakachti Imo, I debated with him, Ulafanav, and in his presence. The Hodali, and Rash, my grandfather admitted to me, She'ilu Hayalo Panai, if he had had more time, Hayatzarach Lasos Perushim Achevim, he would have needed to go back and write more commentaries. It probably means revise his commentary. Lefi Hapshatos Hamischachim Bechoyom. In accordance with the Pshatim, you know, the new simple sense, whatever you want to term, whatever Pshuto Shemikra means, that we're being innovated every day. Right, just the formulation itself suggests a great degree of intellectual ferment. Right, people are really sort of new methodology. It's this exciting new approach to studying Tanakh. So Rashi admitted that really there was more work to do on his commentary. As an aside, Rashi's commentary did go through revisions, and what we often have is a hybrid, and sometimes the markers were left in, and sometimes they were sort of erased. He had a student, Menachem, who was responsible for many of the editings, and sometimes the name slipped out, and sometimes the name was left in. If you actually read Rashi in good editions on all of Chumash, you'll see that. So Rashbam says, I had this debate with my grandfather. It's like you imagine. We like to say, we learn Chumash and Rashi, Rashbam learned Chumash with Rashi. So Rashbam is talking about really a very living dialogue he's having with his grandfather. And that really, Pshuto Shemikra was dynamic, it was really a developing style, and Rashi admitted that there was more work to be done on his commentary. Now he says, V'ata Yuruham Askinam Asher Pirshu HaRishonim. Now let's see what the Rishonim had to say. Now this is all about Eila Toldos Yaakov. So the basic problem with Eila Toldos Yaakov is Toldos normally are genealogies. However, when you read the Parsha, we're only told about one son. Eila Toldos Yaakov, Yosef Ben Shras Reishana Hayarasa Chabaton. So that's the problem that the Mefarshim face. So he says, let's see what they had to say. Eila Toldos Yaakov, Eila Mikros Umaros She'ira LeYaakov. These are the happenings and the events that occurred to Yaakov. In other words, not genealogies, but Toldos almost in the modern sense of history. V'hineis de'hevelhu, and this is nonsense. Now, who said this pshat, by the way, that Rashbam calls nonsense? His grandfather. Rashi was the one who said that. He has some very sharp references to comments that his grandfather makes. They do not seem terribly respectful. And he goes on to explain that every time Toldos is used, it refers to genealogies, and Rashbam gives his explanation. But here you can sort of see, again, Rashbam doesn't spell out a specific approach to specific areas, but clearly there's a lot of change going on in how they're interpreting Tanakh. And here he quotes his grandfather's acknowledging that much more work needed to be done. If we now move to the next comment, which is the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. And Mishpatim is an area that's very interesting because, obviously, on some level, Dinei Mamonos is probably the one area in Halacha that's most open to regulation by Svara. If there's one chelik of Shulchan Aruch which is most subject to change, even in a Halachic society, it's Choshen Mishpat, because in many of the Dinim, so the assumptions of the parties involved in contracts and things like that, or societal assumptions about people's responsibilities play a role, differently than perhaps in any other area in Halacha. So Rashbam, in introducing Parshas Mishpatim, says the following: Yedu Yavinu Yodei Seichel Ki Lo Basi Lefarish Halachos Afal Pishem Ikar. This is constant apology of Rashbam, right? You know, everybody knows, I'm not coming to explain the halachos, even though that's the primary purpose. Kemoshe Perashi Mibreishis Ki Miyitru Hamikros Neshvan Hagadas Halachos. You know that's not what I do. Umiksasan yimatzu beperushei Rabbeinu Shlomo Aviyami Zatzal. And you can find a lot of the halachos, some of them, you can find in Rashi's commentary. Va'ani leferish pshutan shel mikra osbasi. But I came to explain pshuto shel mikra. Va'afarish handina v'halachos lefi derech eretz. This is a very tricky expression. What he probably means is the following. I'm going to explain the laws in accordance with common sense. Derech Eretz means the way people engage. In other words, Chazal may have had certain interpretations, but I'm going to sort of present the sort of, I want to say, more balabatish ways of thinking about these things. So he says, and he feels, it's funny, he feels this constant need to apologize. I know, that's really the brief purpose. Okay, but that's not what I'm doing. When it comes to, and I'm actually going to look at one example of from Parashas Mishpatim in a few minutes. When it comes to the Parashios and the Mishkan, which sort of form their own interesting kind of set, forget for a moment what Rashbam has to say on the Mishkan. What do Chazal have to say about the Mishkan and the Big Day Kahuna? So the truth is, on the Mishkan, we have scattered Gemaras throughout Shas, nothing systematic or comprehensive, and then there's a Brisa that we have, it's probably of the Amoraic period or later, called the Brisa Melachas HaMishkan. Rashi quotes it, we have printed editions of it. That's what we have on the Mishkan, Parshas Truma. On Parshas Tetzaveh, what type of commentary do we have Chazal on the Big Day Kahuna? And the answer is, nothing. There's maybe one daf, one amud in Maseches Yom at the end of the seventh parak that talks a little bit, minimal amount, about how the threads were spun for the Big Day Kahuna, you know, and that's it. Nothing. And you see this in Rashi's commentary, that Rashi in some cases is struggling. We take certain things for granted because we probably looked at picture books. But if you actually look at what the Torah says, there's often a machlokas harishonim. And so when Rashi describes what the ephod is, right, so I have a definite picture of the ephod. The ephod is kind of like an apron which covers mostly the back, and it's got a wide belt that sits in the front. Not clear at all. And Rashi himself acknowledges that. So Rashbam writes with regards to this, interestingly enough, and so I would just say, when it comes to Truma and Tetzaveh, Rashi himself, because he's limited by the sources that are not available in Chazal, what approach does Rashi himself take? He takes the quintessential Pshuto Shel Mikra. Right? One of the ways of figuring out what Rashi's contribution to Pshuto Shel Mikra is by stripping out all the things he quotes from Chazal and then looking at what's left. If you want to see a very good example of this, if you take one of the old Shul Chumashim, like the standard Chumash Rashi Unklus, right, all Hebrew, go to Rashi and Parshas Ekev. And it's something you'll discover that's really fascinating. If you split the Parsha into about 80% one way and 20% the other. I mean, you go from the beginning of the parasha until right before Bahayim Shemoa, which is like the second to last aliyah. Okay? If you look at that, count the number of lines in Rashi there, and now go to the last 20 psukim, which includes Bahayim Shemoa, and count the number of lines in Rashi there, and it's about equal. So how is that possible? Why is that, that on literally on 80-85% of the parasha, Rashi has the same amount of material that it has on the rainy part? The answer is because Rashi and Sefer Dvarim is almost based completely on the Sifrei Dvarim, the Medrash Halacha on Dvarim. For whatever reason, there's lots of Medrash Halacha, even though it's not Halacha, on Parshas Dvarim Veschanan, even though it's very little Halacha. You get to Parshas Ekev, again, which is almost no Halacha, for some silly reason, or unknown reason, there is no Sifrei whatsoever on the first 80-85 psukim. There's only Sifrei on the last 20 psukim. That's why Rashi's commentary is so imbalanced, because most of what Rashi draws from in Sefer Dvarim is the Sifrei. So if you look at the first half of Rashi's commentary on Parshas Ekev, you get a much more distilled form of Rashi's original contribution shot. There are a few Gemaras Rashi quotes there, but there's most of what you see in Rashi on the first 80% of Ekev is Pshuto Shel Mikra. So the same thing to a great extent is true on the Big Day Kahuna part of Parshas Tetzaveh, the first half, and to a lesser extent, but still to a great extent, to Parshas Truma. Rashi has no material from Chazal, therefore he has to resort to Pshuto Shel Mikra. So Rashbam says, Parshio Shel Mishkan Choshen Ve'ifod Im HaKatzer BePerushon Yimatze BePerush Rabbeinu Shlomo Avimi Tzatzal. If I don't write much about on Truma Tetzaveh, it's because we'll look at Rashi. Because why? Because Rashi there, in fact, is the quintessential Pshuto Shel Mikra of Rashi. Finally, the one case where Rashbam docks is Parshas Tazria Mitzora. You get to the Negayim, and Rashbam writes, Adam kiyeva or besero, ko parshios nige adam minige begodam minige batim, umarosehem, all these things, v'cheshbon heskerem, usaros levanos, useir shachar, v'tzov, aim lanu achar pshuta shemikra klum. There's nothing about Pshuto Shel Mikra that can explain any of this. V'lo al bekiyus derech eretz shel b'nei adam. Notice that expression again, derech eretz. Ela hamidrash shel chachamim, Chazal's Midrash Halacha, v'chukosem v'kabalosem ipi chachamim harishonim ha'ikar. Here Rashbam says, I have nothing to say. Here I can't explain any pshuto shemikra. Go look at what Chazal have to say, which is interesting in its own right. So that's as far as sort of his broad methodological statements. As relates to Agada, not surprising, you would imagine Rashbam does not terribly fond of quoting Agada, and he really doesn't quote much of it. Very often, in fact, when you look at Rashbam's pshat, his pshat is a response often to Rashi's citation of Agada, and he's pointing out to you what Pshuto Shemikra actually is. And again, often, a lot of the time, he doesn't even quote his grandfather, but if you look at what Rashi says, and Rashi quotes a Medrash, and the Rashbam writes the pshat, you realize, he's thinking about what his Zeta did, and he's pointing out that that's not Pshuto Shemikra, this is Pshuto Shemikra. So one which comes in this week's parasha, in the second Aliyah, when they bring the torn Kesones Pasim to Yaakov, and he thinks Yosef is dead, it says, Vayevko Soavim. After Yaakov responds, also Vayevko Soavim. His father cried over him. So Rashbam says, Klomar Zman Meruba. In other words, the Torah repeats itself, that Yaakov mourned, Vayisabel, and Vayevko Soavim. So Rashbam says that the Bechiah, the reason why it's repeated, because it implies that it wasn't just the initial mourning that people typically would experience. Yaakov cried over Yosef a very long period of time. But you're more likely to know the Medrash Chazal about Vayevko Soviv. And then he says, Ulefi shehu meyutar, because the expression is extra, Dorshu chachamim aviv Yitzchak afki hayodeh shelo nerad. So the Medrash is that Yitzchak knew that Yosef had been sold, he wasn't dead, but he didn't reveal it to Yaakov, because he said, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to reveal it, I'm not going to reveal it either. Therefore, Vayevko So Aviv, it means Yitzchak cried, or his father, Yaakov's father, cried over him. But he wasn't crying for Yosef, because he knew Yosef was alive. He was crying over Yaakov's pain. So Rashbam here, again, just one of many examples, where he points out that the Medrash says X. The Medrash is because of the extra language, but the Pshat is the following. The other example is his comments on Parshas Vayechi, Miteref Beni Olisa. In the interest of time, I think I'm going to pass over that for the moment. But if you take a look there, he again writes really, really harshly about a comment, which is his grandfather's. He writes at the beginning, he says that anyone who Hamafarsho, the second line in that Rashbam, in the second Rashbam on the Ramun Tuv, Hamafarsho v'mechiras Yosef, namely Rashi quoting a Medrash, lo yoda b'shita shel pasuk v'lo b'chilut tamim klal. He doesn't understand how to read psukim or how to read the trup. So you get a pretty, he's attacking his grandfather's covenant. Okay, this is not an exhaustive list of Rashbam's slightly harif lines towards his grandfather. Okay. The last part, which I think is really the most interesting part of Rashbam's method, is his relationship with halacha. And as I mentioned at the beginning, the relationship with halacha is very complicated. Because what happens when you interpret a pasuk in a way that's against Chazal's halacha, what does that mean for practical purposes? And the answer, of course, is it means nothing. That's not the intent of commentators. However, various commentators took different approaches. The way I like to quote a characterization, Rav Schechter quoted this differently. The students asked me about it, but when I was in a shir once, he quoted the following statement. He said, they say in the Velt, in the yeshiva world, that Rashi is Kulo Emes, Ramban is Rubo Emes, Ibn Ezra is Rubo Sheker, and Rashbam is Kulo Sheker. That's what they say. Now, from a pure quote Chachamim perspective, I have a hard time saying about one of the greatest Balei HaTosfos that Kulo Sheker. But there is a certain truth being expressed in that statement, not about Emes or Sheker. What that statement reflects really is how did these Rishonim relate to Chazal? In other words, what was their interaction with Medrash Chazal and Halacha and Agada? And Rashi never, as far as I can tell, contradicts Chazal on Halacha. He sometimes, on rare occasions, he offers a Pshuto Shomikra, which is not the way Chazal read the Pasuk Halacha, but it doesn't contradict Chazal's Halacha either. He's saying, Pshuto Shemekra teaches you one thing, which is in accordance with what we would say the Halacha is, but Chazal darshan the different thing. And with regards to Agada, Rashi's quoting Chazal's Agada all over the place. Ramban is a little bit more, radical than Rashi, not by much. Ramban virtually never differs on Halacha. He's a little more frequently will he note that Chazal's Agada is not Pshuto Shemekra. Ibn Ezra ignores Chazal virtually completely in Agada, but absolutely insists in his introduction that whatever Chazal say on Halacha, that's Pshuto Shemikra. For a commentator who was not one of the great Chachmei Masorah, who wasn't the Halachist, and who was often regarded in certain very firm circles with disdain, Ibn Ezra's statements about Chazal's Halacha are pretty firm. But Rashbam was the maverick. Rashbam was the one who frequently, when it came to halachic matters, basically said, Pshuto Shemikra is not the same thing as what Chazal said was the halacha, and often in ways that contradict what the halacha actually is. So, for example, this is an example. The first one is an example that's often cited, but I believe is wrong. It's actually incorrect. It's a famous example. Rashbam on Vayi'erev Vayivoker states that Erev means day turning into night, and Boker means night turning into day. Now that seems very plausible until you think about its implications. If Erev means day turning into night, when it says Vayi'erev Vayivoker Yom Echad, so it means that day came before night. And Rashbam says that explicitly. He says that day comes before night. So apparently Ibn Ezra attacks this in the Shirat HaShabbat or something, this particular position. But the truth is, anyone who thinks, it's not just that the Rashbam did not start Shabbos during the morning, he started at night, you can't even say that this is a halachic argument for Rashbam. The Torah is explicit, at least Lagabe, two different holidays, that the Yom Tov begins at night, not during the day. When it comes to Yom Kippur, it says, May Erev at Erev Tishbesu Shabbat Echem. And when it comes to Pesach, it says, Ad Yom Ha'esrim Lachodesh Bo Erev. Now, unless you're going to argue somehow that Shabbos is different, which seems highly unlikely given that Yom Tov is called Shabbos, Rashbam was commenting about Briyas Ha'olam. He wasn't commenting about halacha here. But this is a passage that's often cited as an example. The next two, however, very much are such passages. On the Pasuk in Parshas Bo, in the first Parsha of Tefillin in the Torah, where the Torah says, Vayala osa yatcha ulizikaron be'inecha, the Tefillin, Rashbam writes, Lefi omek pshuto yiye lecha lizikaron tamid ki'ilu kasav al yatcha. Rashbam says that Tefillin here is metaphorical. What it means, it should be, you should walk around as if God is inscribed on your arm and on your head. So God is always with you. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Summit. That's what he says. Pshuto Shemikra is. Ibn Ezra, by the way, quotes this pshat, and then he quotes Chazal, and he said, since Chazal said it, and it doesn't conflict with Secha, with rational thought, Chazal's comment is Pshuto Shemikra. Ibn Ezra is consistent with his shita. But here Rashbam says the pshat in tefillin is metaphorical. Rest assured, Rashbam wore tefillin. I would gather he wore his grandfather's tefillin style, Rashi, not Rabbeinu Tam, his brother, but I don't know for sure. The truth is that machlokas is machlokas that predates Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. So anyway, here's an example where Rashbam dismisses Chazal's interpretation in favor of what he calls Pshuto Shemikra. And the final example, which is a little bit complex, but I'll try to describe it very briefly. The Torah states that if you let your animal run wild on someone else's property and it destroys property, what's the punishment? The way the Talmud Bavli presents this machlokas is there's a machlokas meitav sadeu. When you meitav means you pay. If you have different qualities of land, you have to pay with the best quality land. Chazal understand that this is a din in currency. When I pay for damages, if I did X dollars worth of damage, I pay X dollars, but the currency I pay is meitav. And the only question Chazal had was, whose quality of land determines meitav? Is that that person who was damaged or the person who did the damage? If you look in the Sugya in Bava Kamma, however, there's a very interesting interpretation there, which is rejected by the Gemara, which the Rashbam actually adopts here as pshat. If you look in the last Rashbam, he says, "Lefi pshuto mashma, lefi meitav sadehu v'karmo shel zeh hanizak yishalev." According to the best quality of the field of the nizak, that's how you pay. Ki shema min meitav achlu behemos of shamazi, because maybe the animals ate from the best quality field of the maybe the mazik animals ate from the best quality field of the nisa. Rashbam here, and he's following a rejected opinion in the Gemara, and it'll be obvious in a moment why the Gemara rejects it, is understanding that meitav is not the currency. Meitav is the value that you pay. Why is that so? Well, when an animal goes and consumes an entire patch in someone's field, there's one little problem when you want to determine damages. You don't know what was there. The animal ate it. It's gone. You don't have proof to that. So the Rashbam understands that you look at the rest of the field of the nizak. You find the best quality part of the field, and you assume that the part that it ate was of that quality. So meitav sadeu shel nizak you pay, ki shema min meitav achlu behemos of shamazek. Now, from a halachic vantage point, the obvious problem is, and the Gemara rejects this daya for this reason, is hamotzei mechaver alaf haraya. If you do damage to my property, but we're not sure what the extent of the damage is, if I want to collect from you, I have to prove the amount of the damage. If it's uncertain whether it's $50 or $100 of damage, you only have to pay $50. But here Rashbam takes, this is classic Rashbam, where he says that the pshat is not the way Chazal read it. Meitav is not a currency, but Meitav actually is a determination of value, despite the general rule of Hamotzei Mechaver Alaf Haraya. And there are many, many, many other examples of this Rashbam in Halacha. I would just conclude with two comments about the particular Rashbam style in Halacha. Why was it Rashbam, firstly, as I said before, to say that the Rashbam was kulo sheker in a serious fashion is highly problematic. In fact, someone raised the question: is where did the Rashbam, where did the Rashbam get his derech halimut from? What made him think he was entitled to interpret scripture in this way? And the truth is, that's the wrong question to ask. The Rashbam was one of the gedolei harishonim. If the Rashbam thought it was appropriate, then the answer is obviously some rishonim thought it was perfectly appropriate, and that should be sufficient. But the other point I wanted to make is really a historical one. Why is it that Rashbam, who was so much more rooted in the world of the Beis Medrash, was so willing to interpret Pshuto Shel Mikra against the Halach of Chazal, but Ibn Ezra, who was in many ways not rooted in the world of the Beis Medrash, he was a firm Jew, but Ibn Ezra, who was very much not rooted in the world of the Beis Medrash, he was so firm when it came to Halacha. And I think the answer to that lies in historical circumstances. Ibn Ezra lived in Spain, and then later he moved around, where there was large schools of rationalist thought, people who were rationalizing the mitzvahs away, right? Who were arguing that mitzvahs were metaphors, and really you didn't actually have to keep the halacha. There was this whole school. There was a very famous chayrim of the Rashba, signed on by most of the rabbanim, excommunicating people who would interpret the Torah metaphorically. And you could see from the chayrim, they were reading all the stories metaphorically, they were reading the halachos metaphorically, and so they weren't, and one of the areas might have been tefillin. Tefillin was a broadly disregarded, non-observed, tefillin and mezuzah were broadly not observed in medieval Ashkenaz and medieval Sfarad. But in medieval Sfarad, the real danger was that some of that may have stemmed from people allegorizing. In Ashkenaz, it may have been because people couldn't afford to, it's not clear what it was. But Ibn Ezra, writing in that context, absolutely categorically refused when it came to halachic matters, refused to countenance any interpretation other than Chazal offered, because it simply fed in to a pattern of this of non-observance. Whereas the Rashbam, living where he lived in northern France, so this was not, though that was the nature of the community was so different that it was much easier to write a commentary which said, oh, that Pshuta Shemikra and Halacha is not the way Chazal said. Of course, that has no impact on what we do, because we don't follow Pshuta Shemikra for Halacha. We follow Chazal's Kabbalah and Chazal's Drasha. So here's a really interesting case where sort of the poles flip in terms of, I'll call it the Frumkeit meter, and what you expect, simply because the societal context in which both of them lived allowed the Rashbam much greater freedom in a certain sense to take a more radical approach to Pshuto Shel Mikra.